Welcome to episode 2 of Bonding and Beer. I'm your host, Rolando Nunez, and today we're going to talk about bonding techniques and which one is best. Roll it! Welcome to our episode number 2 of Bonding and Beer. And we are going to talk about bonding techniques, which one is best. But before we get into that, let me give you a little bit of a Rolando update. So I traveled to El Salvador a few weeks ago. They invited me to be part of the Miss Universe pageant. You know, I got this invitation to be a judge over there. And I also had to lecture for this thing called FOCAP, which is like the Central America Dental Association or something. That's irrelevant. What was relevant was the Miss Universe pageant. Unfortunately, when I got there, they screwed up my credentials. They misspelled my name. It was all a mess. So I couldn't attend. And, you know, that was a bummer. But I did lecture. And you know, had a good time and met with a few people from the area, had great discussions about restorative dentistry. If you're interested to know about my travels and pretty much what I do on a daily basis, you can follow me on Instagram at Roland Bond. That's right. Rolando Bond of King of Bonding. That is who I am, or at least who I try to be. So, you know, you can follow me on Instagram and you can find out about my travels and other things, other cool things that I like to do and post on my social media accounts. So, like I said before, we're going to be talking about bonding techniques and which one is better and whatnot. However, I want to mention why I chose this topic, okay, and why it is important for people to know about the different bonding techniques. Because I feel that there is a place, there is a moment to apply any of the existing bonding techniques. And I think that it's very important for a clinician to not only understand that, but to know that they can be, you know, more versatile when it comes down to using their bonding agents and using what I feel is the most appropriate technique. So this is the reason why I choose to talk about this specific topic. But before we go any deeper into the topic, let's do the beer thing. I don't want to say the main reason, but one of the big reasons that I'm here. Let's do this. All right, so let's do the beer thing, all right? This beer that we're going to try today is called Dank Meme. The Dank Meme is a hazy American pale ale. The can, for those of you who are not going to see a video, they're just listening. They can. It's a kind of light can with green letters. It's got sort of a happy face looking to the side, and it's a tall boy. It's a tall boy. It's not your regular can. It's a tall boy. This is from Triptych out of Savoy, Illinois, and I'm going to read the brewery's beer description. This is directly from their website. It says, brewed as a love letter to the trendsetter of the East Coast. So this is kind of like, yeah, this is our version, you know, telling the guys in the East Coast. This is pure poetry at its best. So it's like, as a love letter to the trendsetters of the East Coast. Yeah, this is our version, right? Dank Meme is a golden pale ale brewed with plenty of oats and wheat. This beer doesn't care about aesthetics or clarity. The name of the beer, not the name, but the description is a hazy American pale ale. So this is not going to be clear when we pour it. It's going to be hazy. And it says right here, hopped like a boss, it is sure to make you say me gusta or not. I feel there's going to be a lot of me gusta in this guy. I've had it before. And this is a gift from a friend here at Bisco. His name is Matt. And every time he travels close to Savoy, he will bring me a 4-pack of this Dank Meme. Again, this is a hazy American pale ale. And American pale ale, they derive from the English pale ale beer style. The English pale ales tend to be darker, a little bit more nuttier. Their color is more towards the amber rather than the yellow. And they taste different. The American versions of pale ale, they use different types of hops, which is the component that will provide the bitterness to the beer. The hops that are used in American pale ale style are more citrusy, are more floral, and they provide a different flavor profile. I particularly love American pale ales. They're awesome. And I have tried this before because Matt has always brought me one, not one, but, you know, a few every time he travels close to Savoy. So we are going to try this. You got to love that sound. You have to love that sound. So I'm going to pour it right now. I think I did a little bit of over-pouring right there with the foam. I got a little bit too much of foam, but that's okay. That's the way I pour, or that's the way it came out. I like for these things to be organic. So, you know, I can smell a lot of, you know, there are a lot of floral. There's not a hint. I want to say it really smells floral and piney, citrusy. The look of it, it's quite hazy. It's not a clear beer. And because I didn't do the best pour, there's a lot of foam going on. But that's okay. I can let it settle or I can take a sip. Either way, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. Because you need to understand something. I am recording this podcast during working hours. Meaning, I am drinking in the job. I'm drinking while I'm working. You really can't beat that. How many of you guys have the opportunity to do so? I do. Why? Because life is grand. Why is life grand? Because of beer. This was approved by the people that run this place. They allowed for me to drink during working hours. Let's go. Let's see.
Sip, 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 sip.
Yeah, just like I remembered. Just like I remembered. This is extremely nice. This is extremely nice. And we're going to drink it while we do our podcast. And we're going to give it a score at the end. So stick around to see how much I really liked it. All right, man. So let's get back to topic. All right. Let me pour a little more here so we can get, you know, we get things going. So, like I said before, we're going to talk about bonding techniques and why they are all important. I think it is important to know the bonding techniques from a history point of view that will allow us to understand the timeline of development of products. But also, it is important to know them because they can be applied by the same clinician in different clinical scenarios. So can you use only one bonding technique for everything? Yes, you can. What happens if you're able to, if you could use different bonding techniques in different clinical scenarios? And this is what we're going to discuss today. So we're going to talk about the evolution of Total Etch. We're going to talk about the evolution of Self Etch. We're going to talk about the evolution of Selective Etch. Where did they come from? When they came about in the timeline of the history of dentistry, and where can we use them? Where can we apply them? What is the best clinical setting for each one of these techniques? You know, in my humble opinion, you don't need to agree, but I really appreciate that you're listening. So let's dive into the topic.
Sip, sip, sip.
Let's go through the history of these bonding techniques. At the beginning, back in the 70s and the 80s, the only way to bond was bonding to enamel with, you know, etching with phosphoric acid, the enamel. The dentin was going to be protected with glass ionomer or, you know, calcium hydroxide and glass ionomer. And then some sort of primer will be applied to the enamel and then the composite will be placed on the top. On top of that enamel that was etched. This is a technique that was taught in dental schools back in the 70s, back in the 80s, and it worked. A lot of the composite that was being used was self-cure, but it bonded to the enamel only, no bonding to dentin. However, in the, you know, mid and late 80s and early 90s, you know, you had guys like Fusayama from Tokyo, from, you know, University of Tokyo, Professor Fusayama, guys like Nakabayashi that introduced to the world total etch. Total etch is a technique that requires the placement of phosphoric acid to both enamel and dentin. And what they showed was that the total etch technique will remove the smear layer and it will expose collagen and it will open the dentinal tubules. And then by applying an adhesive that contains resin, it will impregnate the collagen, creating something called hybrid layer. And you will create bond to dentin, something that was unheard of. Okay, so now you go from bonding to enamel only to bonding to enamel and dentin. And this was taught for, I don't know, probably a decade, even longer, okay, exclusively. In order to bond to the tooth, you're going to do total etch. However, bad management of dentin due to collapsing of the collagen and hindering the ability of the adhesive to get and seal the dentinal tubules, that caused sensitivity. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to a previous episode where I describe sensitivity thoroughly, okay? So companies understood that sensitivity was an issue, so they came out in the late 90s and the early 2000s with a new bonding technique called self-etch. The introduction of organophosphates into the systems like MDP. Now you can bond to dentin without the need of phosphoric acid etching. And also you can bond to enamel without the need of phosphoric acid etching. So this technique just basically removed the possibility for sensitivity. And this was great. Everybody jumped on board. Clearfield SE Bond from Curare was the first one introduced in the US. And then a lot of companies started doing the same thing. Okay. Now these products were, you know, if you take aside Clearfield SE Bond, which is a fantastic product. All those products in the early years of self-etch were not very optimized. They were unstable. They didn't bond very well. But the principle was what drove the development, not having to etch with phosphoric acid. The biggest limitation of self-etch, the self-etch technique, is that it will not etch the enamel properly. And your bonding to enamel, specifically to uncut enamel, is going to be deficient. So you started to see some ditching and staining at the enamel composite interface due to poor bonding, okay? And this is a problem. This is a problem because if you don't have good bonding to enamel, things are going to leak, okay? Now, I presented some of this information from my cases in a meeting in Brazil. I remember I showed my restorations and how they were ditching and staining and so on and so forth. And one of the things that I presented was like, I don't have any sensitivity anymore by using self-etch, but my bonding to enamel doesn't look very good. And one lady who was sitting there said, hey, why don't you just etch the enamel with phosphoric acid? So basically she told me to selectively etch enamel. Selective etch was not a thing. It wasn't a technique that was recognized as such until later when it was published and whatnot, which is basically going back to the initial technique. But now we're going to selectively etch the enamel and rinse that with phosphoric acid, rinse that and apply a bonding agent to both enamel and dentin simultaneously. And this is awesome because now you are not creating any possibilities for sensitivity on the dentin and you are bonding extremely well to enamel. And this all led to, you know, the development of universal bonding agents. Okay. So if you look at the development of bonding agents at the beginning with total etch, you had products like Allbond 2, and this is where doctors saw Byung Seo from Bisco Shine, you know, he understood the whole thing about bonding to dentin, explained by Fusayama and Nakabayashi and those guys, and he developed products like Allbond 2. And then we moved to self-etch, where total etch became, I don't want to say a secondary bonding technique, but it became another bonding technique instead of the only bonding technique. And then, of course, when selective etch it was understood to be probably the most optimized technique, universal bonding agents were coming out. But the beauty of universal bonding agents is that you can use it in any technique. You can use it in total etch, you can use it in self-etch, and you can use it in selective etch. So that's kind of like the history of not only the bonding techniques, but also of the bonding agents. Now, the question is, do I need to actually know each one of these bonding techniques and how to use them? And the answer could be no, you don't have to. But it's interesting to know that you could use it in different clinical scenarios. So I want to share with you where each one of these bonding techniques have their space based upon different clinical settings. So, for example, if you're going to do a conventional crown bonding, right? You're going to bond to a prep that is a conventional crown prep. I personally wouldn't etch it with phosphoric acid. I wouldn't etch it with phosphoric acid. There's a lot of dent in there, maybe way too much. And if it's a vital prep, and then, you know, you could open the possibility for sensitivity. So I would probably go with a self-etch technique on all that dentin. And you could, using a universal bonding agent, such as Alban Universal or Scotchbond Universal or, you know, Adhesive Universal or any universal bonding agent in that specific scenario. You can self-etch the dentin, achieve good bond, and move forward. I think that would be what I would do, you know, for sure. I'm going to self-etch that dentin with a universal bonding agent and do my crown cementation. However, if you decide to bond the veneer, you know, you do your veneer prep and there might be some dentin exposed. And then even though there is dentin exposed, you can control that moisture a little bit better because there isn't much per surface area of dentin exposed. So you can total etch it. Not a problem. A lot of enamel being etched, a little bit of dentin being etched. You control the moisture and then you keep going. This is where total etch shines. And I'm going to give you a tip. This is what we like to call row tips. When you etch dentin, do not use air after you rinse the phosphoric acid. Place the phosphoric acid, rinse it. Don't use air on the dentin. Don't. If you do that, you could run into the possibility of collapsing the collagen, which can lead to, you know, post-op sensitivity. You want to make sure you control the moisture by other means. And I usually recommend HYVAC, suction. You suction to remove the excess moisture and then apply your bonding agent, okay? That is definitely something to think about. Now, if you're going to do a direct composite, I would recommend selective etch because your direct composite has a lot of dentin, your prep for a direct composite has a lot of dentin, but also has enamel. Okay, so you want to etch that enamel in order to achieve the best bonding possible. And you want to etch it with phosphoric acid, right? And then you rinse it, and then you apply your bonding agent to both enamel and dentin. Your bonding agent has to be either a self-etch or a universal bonding agent, okay? But it is important to etch that enamel. You etch the enamel and then you apply your bonding agent. No sensitivity because you didn't expose the dentinal tubules or the collagen. And your bonding to enamel is going to be optimized because you etched it with phosphoric acid. Now, here's another tip. If you are willing to try these, you know, these recommendations that I'm giving to you, you might think, how many adhesives do I need? How many bonding agents? Well, you only need one. You need a universal bonding agent that can be used total etch, self etch, or selective etch. Like Alban Universal, you know what I'm saying? So the versatility that a universal bonding agent provides is part by none. This is something to consider, okay? A universal bonding agent in order to give you the versatility to use any bonding technique without having to think about it, okay? And the other thing is, if you are going to do selective etch, you need to think about your etching. There are etchings that are extremely flowable, and there are etchings that are more thixotropic. I'm going to give you an example really quick. At Bisco here, we have UniEtch and Etch 37. They are semi-gel etchings. They're very runny, but they were designed to work in Total Leche. The idea is to cover the most amount of surface, you know, when you apply it. And that includes enamel and dentin, okay? However, when we're talking about selective etch, you want something that is more thixotropic, something that will stay where you place it. This is where Select HV Etch comes in place. This product was developed specifically for the selective etch technique. I'm not saying that you should have two etchants. I'm not saying that you should try to look at different etchants. What I'm saying is that some etchants are designed for total etch and some etchants are designed for selective etch. Something to consider. Now we move forward towards the beer. We're going to give it a score. Let's go. So we are drinking Dank Meme. Dank Meme by Triptych from Savoy, Illinois. And the question is, what do I think about this beer? And did it match the brewery description? Because everyone will say whatever they want about their product, right? This one does match the brewery description. It's hazy. It's not clear at all. It's very, very hazy. Okay? It does have some floral tones, some citrusy tones. It's not as bitter as an IPA, but it's got some punch into it. So yes, it is hoppy. It's not meant to be as hoppy as an IPA. It's meant to be as hoppy as an American Pale Ale. So this one is definitely, you know, it's a match with their very own description. Would I drink it again? Absolutely. 100%. Where would I drink this? Well, like, what is my perfect scenario? You know, if I'm having like grilled chicken, shrimp, a burger, you know, pizza, and I have a bunch of good friends surrounding me, this is something that I will definitely drink. So we're going to give it a score from, you know, 1 to 5. We're going to give it 4.5, you know, 4.5. I think it's fair. It's not my favorite style of beer. But that doesn't hinder my ability to give it the highest score of that style of beer. 4.5, I think, is a great score. And I hope you have the opportunity to try Dank Meme by Triptych. By the way, we're going to send them this review to see if we can get some beers here. You know, I'm just saying. You know what I'm saying? All right, so it's Q&A time, and I would like to remind you guys, you can send us your questions via email, and our email is bondingatbeer@gmail.com, or you can send us your questions via direct messages through our Instagram account, which is @bondingandbeer. Now, the first question right here is from Carlos Diaz from Montana. That's interesting. You know, Carlos, where are you from? Because as far as I know, us Hispanics run away from the cold. And you live in Montana, but good for you, brother. If snow is what you like, you know, that is your thing. Enjoy it. And the question is, if I use Clearfield SE Bond, can I use Selective Etch Technique? Absolutely. I will highly recommend that if you're using any self-etch adhesive, you use the selective etch technique. Because by etching the phosphoric acid, by etching the enamel with phosphoric acid, you're going to achieve a more predictable and strong bond to the enamel, while at the same time achieving a good bond to the dentin structure in self-etch mode. So yes, you can use the selective etch technique. Not a problem, brother. Now we have a question here from the Denise Warner. I can barely speak now because I've been drinking quite... Do you really think that when we record this podcast, we only have one beer? You know how many times we cut, keep going, and we have to refill the glass? So by the time I'm doing Q&A, whew, let's go. So Denise Warner from Oregon. Can I use self-etch bonding technique to bond a veneer? You can. But you shouldn't. Will it bond? Probably. Will be optimized? Will it be optimized? No. You need to etch enamel with phosphoric acid, period. And a veneer is a restoration that has no retention by nature. And when I talk about retention, I'm talking about retention due to the prep design. You need to etch it with phosphoric acid in order to achieve the best bond to enamel. So to answer your question, can you? Yes. Should you? If I were you, I wouldn't. I will go with phosphoric acid etching and then, you know, placing your bonding agent and moving on with your cementation, your veneer cementation, okay? And we have the last question from Skylar Ruth. And what's with the cowboy hat? Okay, so cowboy hat. You know, a lot of people get annoyed by my cowboy hat, and I really don't care because this is just part of who I am. And let me tell you what's with the cowboy hat. I was watching a series at an airport on my computer. Long story short, super short. Series is about a urban cowboy, U.S. Marshal. The name of the series is Justified. This couple is, they're looking at the fact that I'm watching this show. And they said, they asked me, do you like this show? I said, I love it. We started talking. And then they said, hey, we got a bunch of, we would like to send you something. And I said, absolutely. Here's my address. I gave them the Bisco address. And they sent me a bunch of DVDs with cowboy movies, the series Justified, and a cowboy hat. So I could enjoy, I could wear the hat while I watched the cowboy movies. I think that was extremely sweet. And ever since that happened, I wear my hat as much as I can. So, you know, recommendation for you. Find that thing that you like, find that drink that you like, and enjoy it. So I like beer and cowboy hats. What is it that you like? Let's go. All right, that's a wrap for today. You know, it's been a pleasure doing this episode of Bonding and Beer. You know, be sure to like, to comment, to follow. You can find us at Bonding and Beer. I'm drunk already. You can find us at Bonding and Beer. No, you can actually find us on Instagram, and our handle is at Bonding and Beer. You can also email us bondingandbeer@gmail.com. We are on YouTube, so you can watch the video. For those of you who are only listening, you can watch our videos on YouTube, and we would appreciate it. So again, leave a comment, follow, like. That's part of the game. That is the social media game. Next episode, we're going to talk about bioactive materials. Ooh, buzzword. Bioactive materials. We have a guest. His name is Dr. Eric Yu. And he works, he's the head honcho of the R&D department. You're going to enjoy him. He also likes beer. Otherwise, he wouldn't be invited. I wouldn't invite somebody who doesn't drink beer. Absolutely not. Oh, I don't drink. You're not coming. You're not. Oh, what if I only drink wine like Ray Hampton and such? He doesn't drink beer. He's never going to come to this podcast. I hope you're listening to this, Ray Hampton. You're never going to come. Oh, I only drink vodka. I might invite you. But if you only drink wine, I'm sorry. I know that is not cool to be, you know, like to discriminate. But this is our podcast. And Jeremy and I love beer. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this. You know what I'm saying? Thank you for tuning in. This is Bonding and Beer. I'm your host, Rolando Nunez. Let's go.
This has been a Bisco production. Rolando is an employee of Bisco. However, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Bisco.
Okay, so
Cam Moreno to the lobby. Your mother is here to pick you up. Cam to the lobby.
That's awesome. What do? We keep going?
Yeah.
All right.